Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate
vasudevaya.
Om namo
bhagavate
vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 61, Text Number 20, if I'm not mistaken. Chapter 61.
Sri Rajo Vacha Katam Rukmya Riputraya Pradadu Hitaram Yudhi Krishnena Paributastvam Hantum Randram Pratikshate Etad Akya Hime Vidvan Vishor Vaivahikam Mitaha Sirajo Vacha Katam Rukmya Riputraya Radha Duhitaram Yudhi Krishnena Paributastam Hantum Randhram Pratikshate Etad Akya Hime Vidvan Dvishor Vaivahikam Mitaha.
Sri Rajo Vacha
Katam Rukmyari Putraya Prada Duhitaram Yudhi Krishnena Paribhutastam Hantum Randram Pratikshate Etat Akhya Hime Vidvam Dvishor Vaivahikam Mita Jirajo Vacha Katam Rukmya Riputraya Pradadu Hitaram Yudhi Krishnena Paributastam Antum Rantram Pratikshate Itadakya Hime Vidvan Vishor Vaivahikam Mita. Siraja Vacha Katam Rukmiyari Putraya Prada Juhitaram Yudhi Krishnena Paributastam Hantum Randram Pratikshate Etadakya Hime Vidvan Vishor Vaivahikam Mita.
Ladies.
Siraja Vacha Katam Rukmya Riputraya Pradadu Hitaram Yudhi Krishnena Paributastam Hantum Radhram Pratikshate etadatya hime vidvan dvisho vavahikam nita. Sri Raja Uvacha. The king said, Katam, how? Rukmi, Ari, of his enemy, Putraya, to the son, Pradat, gave, Duhitaram, his daughter, Yudhi, in battle, Krishnena, by Krishna, Paributaha, defeated, Tam, him, Lord Krishna, Hantum, to kill, Randram, the opportunity, Pratikshate, he was waiting for, Etat, this, Akhyahi, please explain, to me, Vidvan, O learned one, Dvishaho, of the two enemies, Vaivahikam, the marital arrangement, Mitha, between them. King Parikshit said, how could Rukmi give his daughter to his enemy's son? After all, Rukmi had been defeated by Lord Krishna in battle and was waiting for an opportunity to kill him. Please explain this to me, O learned one, how these two inimical parties became united through marriage. So we've got a... a turning point here in the story. I'll read on. There's no purport to this verse. Anagatam atitam cha vartamanam atindriyam viprakrishtam vyavahitam samyak pasyanti yoginah. Mystic yogis can perfectly see that which has not yet happened, as well as things in the past or present, beyond the senses, remote or blocked by physical obstacles. Purport. Here King Parikshit encourages Sukadeva Goswami to explain why Rukmi gave his daughter to Lord Krishna's son Prajumna. The king stresses that since great yogis like Sukadeva Goswami know everything, the sage must also know this and should explain it to the anxious king. Text 22. Sri Shukuru Vacha Britta Svayam Bade Sakshad Anangong Nanga Yutastaya Ragya Sametan Nirjitya Jaharoi Karato Yudhi. Sri Shukadeva Goswami said, at her Svayamvara ceremony, Rukmavati herself chose Prajumna, who was the re-embodiment of Cupid. Then, although he fought alone on a single chariot, Prajumna defeated the assembled kings in battle and took her away. Yadyapi anushmaram vairam rukmi krishna vamanitaha yattarad bhagineyaya chutam kurvan svasupriyam. Though Rukmi always remembered his enmity toward Lord Krishna, who had insulted him, in order to please his sister, he sanctioned his daughter's marriage to his nephew. Purport. The answer to King Parikshit's question is given here. Ultimately, Rukmi approved his daughter's marriage to Prajumna in order to please his sister Rukmini.
Text 24. Rukminyas tanayam rajan kritavarama shuto bali upoye me vishalakshim kanyam charu matim kila. O King Bali, the son of Kritavarma, married Rukmini's young daughter, large-eyed Charumati. Purport. Srila Sridharaswami explains that each of the Lord's queens had one daughter, and that this mention of Charumati's marriage is an indirect reference to the marriages of all these princesses. Now,
Om Agyanati Mirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmaye Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kada Mahiyam Dadati Svapadantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Girim Yat Kripa Tamaham Bande Sri Gurum Dinatarinam.
So, this is a very interesting chapter in the description of the Lord's pastimes. We get a very comprehensive listing of the different sons of Krishna. 10 sons to each wife, one daughter to each. That's from 16,108 wives. That's a lot of sons. So it's a very long list. But in order to clarify the situation, because one might think, you know, Krishna's just a very attached person. He's just a materially attached person having so many wives and so many children. You know, that's usually 60,000 wives that's a lot of wives. And having a lot of children is a lot of sense gratification. It's quite attractive, I guess, for some. And I think, this is wonderful. What's that verse in the Bhagavad Gita? Yad yad acharati shreshtas tat tat evetaro janaha sayat pramanam kurute lokas tadanuvartate. Whatever the great man performs, the common men should follow. So we'll all be followers of Krishna and have lots of wives and lots of children. However, this is not recommended within the Shastras, actually. Although it is a Vedic tradition, you know, that the Kshatriyas, the leaders, could have more than one wife. But it's interesting to note, Sukadeva Goswami goes at length to point out that Krishna was not under the control of his wives' beauty and attractiveness from the external point of view. That his attraction to the queens of Dwarka was, you know, because it's mentioned that how Krishna, you know, each one of the wives thought that they were Krishna's favourite, because Krishna wouldn't leave the home unless he got permission from them. You know, so from an external point of view, you might think, oh, Krishna's just a henpecked husband, you know, who's just under the control of his wives. And you can see that from the fact that, you know, he has so many children and he was always a devoted husband. But, and even Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur makes the point, you know, that even they would use their feminine attributes to try to attract Krishna. Even he mentions they, you know, using techniques as described in the Kama Sutra. It's mentioned there by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. But he said, no, Krishna's not influenced by the external, if you like, beauty of the queens of Dwarka. And wasn't attracted to them from a lusty point of view, calm. But rather, Krishna was attracted to them because of their prema, or love and affection for them, from a much more deeper and more substantial relationship, that they were his devoted and dedicated servants, if you like. Because a servant in the relationship of a wife, but because of their intense affection and love and attraction for Krishna, then Krishna came under their control because of their devotion, not because of their external manifestation of beauty. Even though they were the most beautiful. They were the most beautiful. They just happened to be one of their attractive qualities, but that wasn't the quality that Krishna was attracted to. Krishna was attracted and controlled. Krishna's attracted and controlled by his devotees, not because of their material qualifications, but because of their devotion. And in fact, Krishna followed all of the... If we were to follow Krishna's example, it's not so much that we, you know, follow the example of his having so many wives, but rather the example is that in having so many wives, he wasn't there to exploit them. He wasn't there attracted by their feminine beauty, if you like, external beauty. He was attracted to their devotion, and that they lived a religious life. The children were born as a result of the following of religious principles. Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita that, you know, of sex, sex life performed according to religious principles, that I am. That type of sex life I am. So that was the relationship, and that was the family role model that Krishna demonstrated in his marrying 16,108 wives. You know, it's mentioned in the, I think it's later on in the Bhagavad Gita, the wives of Dwarka were very happily lying in bed with Krishna, you know, sleeping with him, but then the cock would crow and they would rue the fact. Oh no. Because Krishna would get up straight away and then do his, you know, morning program. And he would sit down and meditate on himself, which is okay for Krishna. That's, he can do that. We're not to do that. We're to get up and also follow his example and meditate on Krishna. Krishna's example is he meditates on himself, so that's what we do. We also get up and meditate not on us, but on him. So it wasn't that he was so attracted to his wives that he would sleep in because he's enjoying with them, which is what the, you know, that's the materialistic notion of enjoyment. So Krishna's example is one of adherence to religious principles. That's the example that we should follow. So even though we have a long list of all of the children and all of the wives and so forth, the point is brought out very clearly that these relationships are not ordinary relationships, but rather they are extraordinary in their adherence to devotional principles. One just has to have the devotional mood to be able to understand. But otherwise it's very easy for people to misunderstand Krishna's having 16,108 wives. What to speak of the rasa dance in Vrindavan. Also, these things can be very easily misunderstood by people. But here, it's been clarified by Sukadeva Goswami so that there's no misunderstanding as to what Krishna's relationship is with the wives of Dwarka. So now, the story is changing because or as an extension of this point, there's now the marriage of the children. Right? That's the next responsibility of the householder. Big responsibility is, you know, how am I going to get my children married? You know, in modern times, parents don't have to worry about it because usually the kids leave home. Which is not exactly the ideal situation. So here, and this leads then on into the story of, you know, the marriage of Aniruddha and Usha. And Ushapati. Is it? Oh no, Usha. Usha, yeah, Usha. Ushapati's her father. So, but this brings rise to a question by Maharaj Parikshit because, you know, the discussion is of Pradyumna because Pradyumna is the first son. And as is mentioned here, there's a mention of Charumati. The daughter was married, Charumati, Rukmini's young daughter, she was married. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out that this indicates that all of the girls were married. And of course here we have the example of Pradyumna getting married, description of his marriage. But the description of Pradyumna's marriage is unique because he's marrying Rukmavati. And she is the daughter of Rukmi. So Maharaj Parikshit is rather bewildered by this because Rukmi is the sworn enemy of Krishna. And it mentions here, Hantum randram pratikshate, in this verse that we've just chanted. Hantum means to kill. Randram, the opportunity, pratikshate, he was waiting for. So Rukmi was just waiting for the opportunity to kill Krishna. He was such an enemy. Sworn enemy of Krishna. So it just doesn't make sense. Ordinarily, the kings would not even consider, the thought wouldn't even enter their head. How is it? So you know, giving their daughter to the son of their enemy. In fact, in the scheme of things, often allies would, you know, give sons or daughters in marriage to strengthen their friendship, to make the union of their kingdoms complete. They would link up through marriage. So it just didn't make sense. These are two enemies. Normally enemies wouldn't even consider such a thing. How come they're behaving as friends? Basically, that's what it means. What is the answer? How is it possible? And Maharaj Parikshit is saying to Sukadev Goswami, you're a yogi, a great yogi, mystic, but yogina, anagatam. You can see what is going to happen in the future. Anagatam means that which hasn't happened. You can see it. Atitam cha. Atitam means that which doesn't have any time. In other words, that which is already past. Atitam cha. Vartamanam. You can see what's going on right now. Vartamanam means what's happening right now. Atindriyam. That which is ati indriya. Indra means the senses. Indriya means the senses. Atindriya means that which you can't see with your senses. You can see these things. You see the potency of a yogi here, actually. Viprakrishtam, that which is off in the distance, far away. Vyavahitam, that which is blocked by obstacles. Samyak pasyanti yogina, you can see all of these things perfectly. So please explain to me, how is it possible that these two enemies are now behaving like friends, basically? That's his question. What's going on here? Sukadev Goswami actually, he responds more or less, well, I don't know, actually. I don't know. But, he says, see, the thing is, Rukmavati wanted to marry Prajumna, and there wasn't a lot that Rukmi could actually do about it. So what he did was, he allowed her to have the Swayamvara ceremony so that she could choose. And as it's explained here, the reason is because actually Rukmini wanted this arrangement, his sister. Ordinarily, Rukmi would not have done this at all. He's a sworn enemy of Krishna, so why would he give his daughter? And, you know, usually the daughter is, you know, very dear to the father. Not that the sons aren't, but the daughter very often is very dear to the father, and so the father always feels a great sense and a need to protect his daughter. So there's a strong bond of affection and love and affection between the father and the daughter. he would have felt a great deal of anxiety in making this arrangement, but he was obliged to Rukmini, and the reason why Rukmini was obliged to Rukmini was because she had actually saved his life. She was the one. He owed her a debt, if you like. Because she was the one who begged for mercy when Krishna and Balaram were going to kill him. Is that right? And instead they chopped off his... Is he the one who they chopped off half a moustache and cut his hair and stuff? Like, just thoroughly humiliated him. What to speak of the fact that they'd captured him and were about to kill him, then they'd, you know, it's the kind of stuff that we used to do at school. You know, stick people in rubbish bins and stuff. Just humiliate them. Stick their head in the toilet and flush it. I think it's called bullying these days. Not allowed to do it. But, you know, I mean, Rukmi probably should have been killed. And in fact, you know, as this story progresses, there we see that Rukmi gets himself in trouble again. So the reason why Rukmavati was given in... Her hand was given in marriage to Prajumna was because even though Rukmi didn't like the arrangement, he set up the Swayamvara ceremony so that it would get him off the hook, basically. It would appear as if Rukmavati was making her own choice. Because that upset everybody who was there, as it's mentioned here. That upset all of the kings and other personalities who were there. But then Prajumna managed to fight them all off, and he was the victor. And Prabhupada explains that at the Swayamvara ceremony, it was not uncommon for such events to deteriorate into a full-blown battle. A fight, basically. And then, you know, the victor takes all. And in fact, I've heard it described. People don't like me saying this in the marriage ceremonies, but I've heard it described that the kunkum is the sign of victory for the Kshatriya king. You know, that's the blood of the enemy that got defeated. I'm the winner. Which sounds a bit, yeah, that sounds a little bit gruesome, but that's what I've heard. And then there's a mention here, the son of Kritavarma married Rukmini's young daughter, large-eyed Charumati. So this description shows the expansiveness, the enormity of Krishna's pastimes, because it's described here that all of Krishna's sons, so that's 10 times, you know, what's that? 10 times 16,108 is was it 160,108? Is that right? No. A lot. I'm not very good at math. I have to get my calculator out and work it out. But that's a lot of marriages that they had to arrange. And, you know, it's mentioned, we were discussing the other day with Ganga Swara Prabhu, that each one of Krishna's sons was full in opulence, the same opulence and the same potency as Krishna. And each one of them had their own children. And so, you know, the enormity is over 1 billion family members. It's just incredible. Hard for us to imagine. Impossible for us to imagine. In fact, it's inconceivable. The expansiveness of Krishna's pastimes at the time. And this passage, this section of the Srimad Bhagavatam just underlines the uniqueness and the specialty of Krishna's pastimes in Dwarka. So does anyone have any comments or questions on any of these points? Yes, what is it?
We have that many people in his family 5,000 years ago.
Yeah.
Then there'd have to be people from that family still on earth now. And then I realised we're all Krishna's children.
Yeah, we're all Krishna's family. Maybe not that particular family. Well, it's very interesting, you see. When Krishna wound up his pastimes, then he took all of these personalities back home, back to the spiritual world, because you know, that could have created quite a bit of a problem. In fact, you also see it. Lord Chaitanya didn't have any relatives, even Lord Nityananda. Advaita Acharya had some sons, a couple of whom actually became non-devotees, from memory. Mayavadis. If you read in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Because, you know, devotional service is not dependent upon lineal descendancy, if you like, or, you know, and this is, we have the, actually there is the Nityananda Vamsa that Prabhupada talks about in the Nectar of Devotion, those who claim to be the followers of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, but only by birthright. So it's not by birth, but rather by qualification that one inherits the, you know, the spiritual realm, if you like. So Krishna arranged it in such a way so that all of his, to resolve that issue, that problem, he just took them all back home. So there wouldn't be any descendants to claim, yes, we are Krishnas. But everybody is Krishnas, as you pointed out. Prabhupada says, we belong to the Achyuta Gotra when we become Krishna's devotees. Because, you know, in India especially, you know, when you go somewhere, then people are identified. What's your Gotra? Especially if they're Brahmanas. I think also the Kshatriyas. What's your Gotra? They ask us what our Gotra is. We no. But we can say, Achyuta Gotra, we're followers of Krishna. We're in Krishna's family. But, you know, this idea of being a descendant can actually be very problematic. And Prabhupada gives the example, you know, of the judge. The son of a judge may very well become a judge because of his association and because of his situation. But still he's got to go to the law school and, you know, qualify himself in order to become a judge. It puts him in a better position. It can put him in a better position, but it doesn't automatically mean that I'm the son of a judge, therefore I should become a judge. He may be, you know, an imbecile, and so therefore not be qualified to be a judge. So the important thing is to be qualified. So similarly also for the brahmanas. And, you know, you can see how it happens. I noticed it even within ISKCON. I've seen it, you know. The temple president stands down the front, right? And then have a guess what happens. So does his son. He goes up and stands with his dad. That's natural, right? But it doesn't mean, you know, that just because he stands up the front with his dad that automatically he's qualified. In fact, in many cases within ISKCON, he's not. Unfortunately. But still, because, and this is where we get this, we have this term, you know, Dvija Bandhu, the friend of the brahmanas. You know, you're a friend of the brahmanas, that's good, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you are a brahmana. So the important element is qualification. So Krishna arranged in such a way so that all of the you know, all of the yadus, basically they clean themselves up, you could say, in a very unique way, which is described at the end of the Bhagavatam, or towards the end of the Bhagavatam. You know, that's a lot of people. A billion people. We think India is crowded now, but boy, it must be pretty crowded then. When you think about it. Although, actually, when you travel in India, even there's a lot of people in India, but there's a lot of open space. So plenty of room for people. Not even these days. You know, India is very crowded. How many people live in India at the moment? More than a billion, isn't it? 1.6 or something like that? So that's huge. But still there's plenty of open space. Huh? Unless you go to Mumbai or Calcutta or places like that. But otherwise, it's a big country, plenty of space. Yes, Monica. That's what it says. Krishna had his sons had the same potency. And you can see that, as Gangaswara Prabhu was pointing out the other day, Prajumna went on a tour of duty when Ugrasena wanted to perform the Rajasuya sacrifice. And he conquered all of the kings and extracted tribute, you know, from them. So they all contributed to the Rajasuya sacrifice. So basically Ugrasena was the emperor of the whole of the planet. And it was exercised by Prajumna. But Gangaswara Prabhu was also making a point that these personalities often didn't take centre stage because the purpose of their appearance with Krishna was to highlight Krishna's activities and Krishna's pastimes. So they may not have demonstrated those opulences or manifest them, right? But rather, their appearance, and some of them, are, as is mentioned here also, Prajumna was the re-embodiment of Cupid. So in order to associate with Krishna and support Krishna's pastimes, then he appeared in that form as Prajumna, the son of Krishna. But yet he didn't display those opulences, even though he was endowed with them, because that was the purpose of Krishna's. That was, you know, the purpose of their appearance was to support Krishna's demonstration of those characteristics. But it says in this chapter, I don't know whether I think it's before in the description of the sons, that they were all as they shared the same opulence and position, full in six opulences like Krishna, Bhagavan. So you know, you could imagine the kind of problems that you could have if you had a whole array of people all manifesting the same qualities as Bhagavan. You know, I am Bhagavan. Oh, I am Bhagavan. But the unique nature of Krishna's pastimes, of Krishna's devotees, is they're all Krishna's servant, and so therefore there's not a problem. They're all working. You know, this is the nature of devotional service, is that Krishna's service, the pleasure of Krishna comes first before my pleasure. Krishna's position is preeminent, prominent, and all of the devotees recognize that. And so therefore they all work cooperatively with that understanding. Yes, ultimately this is all for Krishna's pleasure. So whether I'm happy or not about the situation, then I don't mind. So long as Krishna's happy, then I'm happy. So there's no competition between all of the different Bhagavans, because they all recognize that Krishna is the Swayam Bhagavan. He's the original Bhagavan. This is why it said there is never a disagreement amongst the devotees, even if there is a disagreement. Ultimately, whatever disagreements there are will be put aside for Krishna's pleasure. And then, you know, if there's a disagreement, and it is a disagreement, then you can be sure that's not very pleasing to Krishna. So sometimes the devotees will agree to disagree, but work together. Okay, this is for Krishna's pleasure, no worries. You're the boss. I'm your servant. I'll do it because Krishna will be happy. I'm not happy, but I'm happy. Anything else?
Ooh.
I would say it's logical to assume that they are jiva tattva. Some of them may not have been, but you, like here's Cupid. Is he a demigod ordinarily? A resident of the heavenly sphere? So yeah, jiva, because we've already got the Vishnu tattva in their different expansions. Krishna, Balaram. And even sometimes, you know, we find a combination of personalities in one personality. We find that sometimes in a description of the personalities of the different devotees. But so you may find a mixture also, even. You know, there's the six items that are mentioned by Bhakti Chaitanya Maharaj. I can't remember all of the six, but the first one is Krishna's in control. Right. The second one is anything can happen. Right. Since we don't know exactly the nature of the personality, then it's quite possible that they could be Vishnu Tattva, but it looks, at least on the face of it, that they're Jiva.
How is it that there are
the
showing the same appearance as Krishna?
How did they show it? Maybe they didn't. But certainly they would have it would have been manifest in beauty, in knowledge, in strength, in fame, right? In these different things. Renunciation. But it wasn't manifest to the same degree that Krishna manifested. You know, marrying 16,100. They didn't all marry themselves each 16,108 wives. But there are specialties in their, you know, there are significant characteristics in their pastimes, but they're not elucidated or they're not elaborated upon in the Srimad Bhagavatam, because the idea is to focus on Krishna and Krishna's activities, Krishna's pastimes. So there's certainly specialty in their pastimes. But it was they're there to support Krishna and Krishna's pastimes. Anything else? Of course, you know, our purpose is to enter into Krishna's pastimes, or re-enter Krishna's pastimes. That's our business, re-establish ourselves in Krishna's pastimes. And of course, we do that through the Sankirtan. The method or the means by which we get entrance into Krishna's pastimes is through the Sankirtan Yajna. So we get entrance into Krishna's pastimes through the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord Nityananda. Which is why we're wrapping up the folk news today. And we were discussing, reading yesterday, the means by which we enter into the we are blocked from entering into the pastimes or re-establishing our position because of anattas. Right? This is what blocks us. We are stopped from making progress in devotional service by our attachments. And anattas are of four types of anattas. There's illusion, tattva vibhrama, illusion about the truth. What is real and what is unreal. We're still attached to the unreal. So long as we're attached to the unreal, then we can't actually make progress in our devotional life. Or shall we say it'll be difficult? This is why anatta nivritti is essential, it's a key stage of devotional service. Then there's the desire for material things. Asat Krishna. Desires for things that are not connected to Krishna, basically. In illusion, we don't. The four types of illusion are illusion about who we are, illusion about who God is, illusion or misunderstanding of the process of devotional service, sadhana and prema bhakti, we don't know it, and illusion about things that are obstacles. We accept things which are actually not favourable for devotional service, thinking it's okay. So this is illusion, four types of illusion. And four types of worldly, basically material desires. Desires for material objects. Desires for heavenly pleasures. Desires for mystic powers. You know, this is basically karma. Karma, yoga, karma means, you know, getting material acquisition, material prosperity. Karma yoga is performed also to get birth in the heavenly planets. And then yogis practice their, you know, austerities to get siddhis, to become lighter than the lighters, to control people's minds. You know, fly in the sky, all that sort of stuff. And the desire for liberation. This is material desires, basically. This is called material desires. And then offences. If you want to work out, if you want to know what you need to work on, this is the list, fairly long list. There are offences to the name, Nam Aparad. There's Seva Aparad, offences to the form of the Lord. There's Vaishnava Aparad, there's offences committed to the devotees. And then there's Jiva Aparad, there's offences to other people. You know, it's not that we shouldn't, it's not that you can not offend the devotees if they'd be rude to everybody else. A devotee actually has to become, you know, it's interesting. We mentioned this before. Lord Chaitanya says we actually have to become humble and respectful to others. The key to chanting Hare Krishna is to be humble and respectful to others. This is one of the reasons why, you know, devotional service is not that popular. Because you have to be respectful to everybody else and not expect any return, you know, respect for yourself. And people generally don't like that. What about me? There's a big worry. What about me? Who's going to look after me? If I'm respectful to everybody else, then who's going to look after me? So, these are the aparads. Nam aparad, Seva aparad, Vaishnava aparad, and Jiva aparad. Aparads, you know, to others. And then the fourth item is weakness of heart, Hridaya Durbalyam. And the first item is to be attached to things that are not related to Krishna. So it's interesting. You may know, this happens to the devotees, and it's mentioned that Arjuna was stricken with this ailment, if you like, weakness of heart. He was attached to things not related to Krishna. So you may know this is the right thing to do. You know the truth about the self. And we know the truth about God and devotional service. We may even know that. But because we're attached to things not related to Krishna, even though we know we shouldn't do it, even Arjuna says, you know, why am I forced to act even though I know I shouldn't do it? So this happens to the devotees sometimes, just due to weakness of heart. They know that they should be, that they're a servant of Krishna. They know that they should serve Krishna, but they don't do it. I'm sorry, Prabhu, I can't do it. So this is weakness of heart, attachment to things not related to Krishna. Being kutinati, deceitful or fault-finding, kutinati. This is also weakness of heart. You know, deceitfulness means cheating, basically. Presenting yourself as something that you're not. Or presenting ourselves as something that we're not. This is weakness of heart. You know, I'm a great devotee. Or I'm a very humble devotee. You know, sometimes we... This is cheating. I'm a very humble devotee. Prabhupada said to the devotee, you know, you're not the best of anything. And the devotee said, I'm the most fallen. Prabhupada said, you're not the most of anything. Deceitful or fault-finding. And then matsarya, being envious. These are the weakness of heart. That's probably one of these are some of the toughest anattas, right? When I think about it. And the last one is svapratishtita, which means desire for fame, right? Wanting to be famous. So you can see how these go together. Deceitfulness, fault-finding, envious, desire for fame. So we want to enter into Krishna's pastimes, but in order to enter into Krishna's pastimes, we have to get Krishna's mercy, actually, in order to overcome these anattas. There's a long list. We've got four items, and in each of the four items there's another four characteristics of each one of those. So, boy, you know, what's that? That's 16 basic faults that you can find in the character of a conditioned soul. So that means all day long we've got to keep an eye out for these 16 items. Not too difficult, actually. But we really do need Krishna's mercy to overcome those 16 items. So these are listed by Bhaktivinoda Thakura in the Bhajana Rahasya. Now, it's very interesting. He says, if one is afflicted by any one of these items, then you can't make progress in devotional service. But, he says, it is possible to overcome them. Right? So we might think, oh no, 16 items. Look at all these things. I can't even remember what they are. What to speak of recognizing them in myself. You know, because some of these things... The interesting thing about these anattas is that they exist and you can't see them. Huh? We can't see them. Pride, envy, some of these things are so deeply buried within the heart, you can't see them. You don't recognize them until it's too late. So what hope do you have? So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that actually it's very easy to overcome the anattas. That's why we are so dependent upon Mahaprabhu, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because the means by which the anattas are destroyed is through Nam Sankirtan, through the chanting of Hare Krishna. And you can, you know, you can feel that. Nam Sankirtan, or Sankirtan, is one of the Pancha Anga, one of the items of Panchanga Bhakti, five prominent items which can give prema bhakti to even a person who doesn't have faith in them. They can get love of Krishna, right? Even if you don't have faith in these activities, they're so potent. So that's why we chant Hare Krishna. A lot of emphasis is, well, we would say a lot of emphasis prime importance is placed on chanting Hare Krishna. And of course, chanting Hare Krishna without offence. But the Nam Sankirtan is so potent that it can destroy the anattas. So long as we let it. This is the other thing, you know, we hang on to it. We sometimes wear our anattas a bit like a badge. Oh, I'm so fallen, I can't surrender to Krishna. Prabhu. You know, we hang on to our suffering. You know, there's that story of the disciple who told his spiritual master, you know, Maya just won't leave me alone. And then he gave the example of, you know, hugging the tree. This is what you're like. Leave me alone, leave me alone. And you're hanging on. And that's why we need Krishna's mercy in one sense. And at least in my realization, Krishna's mercy means the mercy of the devotees, living in the association of the devotees. Without the devotees' association, we can't actually make progress in devotional service. We actually, even though it's painful, in one sense, being a Madhyam Adhikari, Madhyam Bhakta, which means, you know, a devotee trying to purify themselves, it means having to make friends with Krishna's devotees. But the problem with making friends with Krishna's devotees is always pointing out your faults. They have to. But that's for our purification, it's for our rectification. It's difficult to live in the association of the devotees, because what it does is it's almost like a mirror, and it reflects then back all of the faults in ourselves. And of course we think, oh, it's the devotees. It's not me, it's them. But actually that's Krishna's mercy. Krishna's mercy in the association of the devotees reflects our weaknesses and our faults. And of course that can be very painful. Anatta Nivritti is a very painful stage in devotional service, because we have to become humble, we have to become respectful, and we're forced to face our own personal failings. And that's not a lot of fun. Really, when you think about it, that's not what makes us ecstatic. Although in one sense it does. It is the key to ecstasy, if you like, because it means that we will have to be humble. So anatta nivritti is, we have to embrace it enthusiastically, even though it's painful. So that we can get Krishna's mercy. It is Krishna's mercy, actually. You read the same thing?
Yeah. It's very difficult to follow instructions.
Very difficult to follow instructions.
But,
why?
It was again mentioned that if you try to follow one instruction, rest of them will follow automatically.
Okay, so what's the one?
I mean, anyone, if you control anger, then humility will follow after that. After that, you will develop devotion, like that. Everything will follow.
Yeah.
So just take care of one of them and
all the others will follow. Yeah. Well, I hope that's true. I'm not sure whether it is or not. I think I've got one controlled and then something else pops out. Where'd that come from? I thought I had that under control. As a result of the anattas, and it's mentioned how bhaya, you know, fear, anger, the seven stages of illusion are manifest, actually. That's why, really, in one sense, I would suggest that actually, you know, because I know when I was a younger devotee, I was always looking for the key, the magic formula. There's got to be one thing around here that you do, and that's going to solve all the problems. And then I discovered, actually, that it's not just one thing, but it's doing all of them combinedly. The process of devotional service is not just one thing. It's not just chanting around, or it's not just taking prasadam, or it's not just associating with the devotees. but it is putting everything together in a harmonious whole that affects our advancement in devotional service. It's combining all of the things together. That's why Rupa Goswami, we're very fortunate actually, Rupa Goswami has, and Prabhupada have given us the guidelines. This is why the Nectar of Devotion is described as the law book for ISKCON, because within that book, say for example, are all of the items, 64 items of devotional service that need to be put together combinedly to create a wholesome devotee. Right? Very, you know, Rupa Goswami is actually a genius. Actually a genius, because he has given us all of the different activities. They're all described there. All of the things to do, right? All of the things not to do. So the, you know, knowledge of sadhana bhakti and prema bhakti is given to us by Rupa Goswami. Knowledge of you know, activities to be avoided is all given there in the 64 items. So it's my understanding that, you know, well, there may be one thing that we do that brings everything else in line, but from my understanding of things, actually it's a combination of all of the different items of devotional service all put together help make us advance. That's why, you know, in one sense it is it's painstaking. And in fact, Prabhupada mentions in the Bhagavad Gita, he mentions that, you know, when you become a devotee, then it is painstaking. And what does painstaking mean? What does that mean? Literally and...
Tapasya?
Yeah, tapasya, definitely. Yeah, it causes pain. To be a devotee means you have to really be... You have to pay attention to detail. And not just one detail, but many details. Like I just mentioned 16 items, but actually there's the 64 items of devotional service. So, you know, in order for us to make advancement, it actually requires painstaking effort to, and attention to detail. And even though we know this, it's interesting. Now I think about it, the weakness of heart comes in. We know, yes, I should be chanting my 16 rounds, I should be doing this, I should be doing that. But we still are attached to, you know, things not related to Krishna. So we don't put the emphasis, we don't place the emphasis on the detail. And it requires effort, you know, not just effort when we're young, but it requires effort when we're middle-aged, old-aged. A lot of effort is required. That painstaking attention to detail. Mahatmaji, you got a comment?
100%
surrender. 100%
surrender.
Yeah. Well, we're all working on it, I suppose. All right, I think we should finish here. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.